Hello and welcome to another Blue Toon podcast, your podcast dedicated to all things Peterhead FC. The Blue Toon podcast is sponsored by Marcos Chipper. You cannot beat the scran doing it, Marcos. This week, we have the honour of having Captain Scott Brown joining us this week, and here's what he had to say.
Right, delighted to say that today we've been joined by none other than Captain Scott Brown. Scott, how are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Pretty much the same as everyone else, as I can imagine, as we were bored, but getting by, that's the main thing.
Yep. Thanks very much for coming on. First things first then, how are you? How is the family since all this has kicked in?
Yeah, good. I mean, it's a bit of a strange time for everyone, I can imagine, but the main thing is we're all keeping safe and well, so yeah, I'm sure we'll get through this at some point, so that is the main priority just now, is to keep yourself occupied and obviously fit and healthy.
Yeah, starting to miss the football now?
Yeah, missed it for 8 weeks, to be fair. I mean, especially now that football's back on the telly with the German football, it's a wee bit strange seeing it with no fans and stuff involved. But again, it's nice to see it back and as a step closer to normality, hopefully. So, yeah, it makes you miss it that wee bit more, seeing it on the telly, definitely.
Yeah. And are you still able to kind of get any kind of training at the moment?
Yeah, I've been trying to keep myself going. It's obviously hard, but kind of the only thing we're allowed to do just now is to get out and about doing a wee bit of exercise. So I think that kind of helps your mental health and all that and keeps you going. So yeah, try to do as much running as possible and try to get on the bike as well just for something different.
And keep in touch with the rest of the boys as well, yeah?
Yeah, we've got a WhatsApp group. As you can probably imagine, that just the boys are chipping in and out of daily. So, yeah, try to keep on, keep involved with them and hopefully be back face-to-face with them soon.
Yeah. So, take you back to about a year ago then. Promotion from League 2 and the Championship. How was that for you and getting it finally over the line?
Yeah, obviously, great memories for last year, especially winning it at Hampden. It was a great time for us all, and especially after what had happened the week before, we obviously still and Albion equalised in the last minute. It would be nice to win it obviously up the road in front of our own fans, but yeah, Hampden wasn't a bad place to kind of go and win the league. So yeah, it was good obviously to get, we feel like we're at the very least a League One club, so to get back into League One obviously was a big positive, and we'd worked really hard for 2 years to get to that point. So, yeah, it was really good memories. I think it was a year ago, a couple of weeks ago. So, nice to obviously to look back and see the photos and stuff. And obviously that day it was nice.
Scott, what was it the dressing room like after the Albion game? Because we were there as fans, and the last couple of minutes it was so deflating. What was it like for you guys going into the changing room, knowing that could have been the day that sealed it?
Pretty much the same, mate, to be honest. It was one of the quietest dressing rooms I've ever been in. I don't really think anyone really knew what to say, because not that we'd felt like we'd thrown it away, because obviously we had the game the following week, but because it was so close, we almost had one hand on the trophy, if you like. It was hard to take, obviously, especially so late in the game. We didn't even have any chance to make any attacks after that. It was literally the last kick of the ball, so for that, it was pretty quiet. But you know, as the week goes on, you start to realise that this is still in our hands, and obviously we can go to Hampden and win it now, which would be just as good, if not even better, than winning it up the road. But I guess it put the fans through a wee bit more of a tough week, and obviously the players, we found it tough as well that week, just to trying to itch to get back onto the pitch. Really, that was a quite a long week, to be fair.
Did it make it more nervous or more exciting, the fact that you could do it at Hampden?
Oh, more nervous, definitely. I mean, it was ours to lose for weeks leading up to the end of the season, to be fair. I mean, and for it to go at the last day, nobody really wanted that. We kind of envisaged going to Hampden with kind of a wee bit of relaxation, thinking that we can actually enjoy this day. It was all done and dusted, but listen, it's great looking back on it, knowing that you won a trophy at Hampden. I mean, albeit it is a League 2 trophy, but not many people can say they've won a trophy at Hampden, to be fair.
Yeah, that's true.
There's two things, two abiding memories I've got of that game. One, I'm still waiting to do my pitch invasion at the end of the game. I was primed and ready to go. And the other thing was, I think Rory must have gotten subbed towards the end of the game. I just remember him up absolutely going ballistic once the goal went in. I think he threw a bottle or something at one point as well. He was absolutely mental. Was that? Did he say anything at the end of the game as well?
Nobody really said anything. You know that? It was like, we sat in the dressing room for about 15 minutes and pretty much silence. I mean, it's one of the weirdest atmospheres I've ever been in, but I don't think anybody could have really said anything to put it right. We were all kind of feeling a wee bit emotional at that point because obviously it happened so late. And listen, there was nothing, it wasn't really like we really made a massive mistake to lose the goal. It was just one of the things that kind of happened. If anything, we probably should have been a couple more goals up in the game and it should have been comfortable, but a bit like last season, we seemed to grind out a lot of games, like kind of 1-0 and such, and it was inevitable that at some point it was going to come back and bite us in the bum, so to speak. So, yeah, it was very strange and very quiet, and I can imagine for the fans it was pretty grim, to be fair. Most of my family stayed up that night, and I ended up coming back down the road. To be fair, I didn't really feel much like staying up with them, so it was a bit of a pity, but hey-ho, as I say, like, we got there in the end, that was the main thing.
And what was Jim's expectations coming into the new season in a higher league? Did he
kind of
targets, or does he just
kind of
let you go?
He kind of lets us go, to be fair. Like, we kind of went quietly about it in the summer and such, but I know from, like, within the camp, we kind of expected to be top, like, definitely top half challenging for the playoffs. That's where we kind of seen ourselves, and I think it'd be fair to say that we kind of let ourselves down a wee bit this season. Like, obviously we stayed in the league, that was the main thing, but yeah, I think we could have obviously picked up a few more points of what we did and obviously been challenging up the top rather than fighting at the bottom.
And do you set yourself any targets for the season?
Not personally, really. I mean, obviously as a midfielder you want to get as many goals and as many assists as possible, which I had my high school scoring season, to be fair, but nothing. I don't tend to set targets. I just tend to go day by day and week by week and obviously try and do as well as you can. I think that if you set yourself targets, injuries and stuff can ruin these targets, so it's important just to kind of stay in the moment and kind of take each game as it comes, really.
And you mentioned your highest goal tally, your top goal scorer this season as well. So did you do anything different yourself this season? Did you find yourself getting into the box more, maybe?
Yeah, maybe subconsciously a wee bit. I don't really think I've done anything. I took more chances, probably, obviously, but my shooting hasn't been great over the years, but probably I had that run during December where I scored 4 in 4 games, so kind of everything just kind of went right that month. So, but yeah, probably just a wee bit of confidence. Goals kind of come in wee spots, so but yeah, I wouldn't say there was anything different as such.
Is Jim giving you more freedom to go forward this season, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we play that 4-3-3 system and Simon kind of sits, it allows me and whoever else is playing in there, whether it be Gaz or Jack or anyone else, it kind of allows us to go and kind of get forward and obviously try and help out the lone striker if we are playing with that kind of 4-3-3 system. So, yeah, it kind of does allow me a wee bit more freedom to kind of get up and support.
Was that a conscious thing by Jim to change his tactics for this season? Because he normally would have gone with 2 up top last year.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think we did try with 4-4-2 at the start of the season and it never really worked for us, to be fair. Whether it be losing that extra man in midfield or I'm not really sure, but certainly we had a good spell 4-3-3 where we were playing well and obviously went on around 3 or 4 games, so I kind of think we kind of stuck with that for a wee bit. But listen, that's what the manager's there for. He's there to make these kind of decisions and obviously pick the team that he feels is going to win games on the pitch.
He's been there long enough now. I think he knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think he knows the club like the back of his hand, to be fair, and hopefully can bring us more success in the future.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And in terms of the players that you brought in, like Gary Fraser, Ryan Conroy, good experienced players, it's good to see from our point of view guys like that coming in. Because you wouldn't expect them to be playing for a club like Peterhead.
Yeah, of course. I mean, obviously Conroy's played for Celtic and stuff like that. He's an experienced player. And I thought he was really good for us when he came in, to be fair. He brought that kind of calmness that we kind of needed in midfield where if he was on the ball, he would really give it away and such. And And Gaz, listen, Gaz should be playing at a higher level than what he is. It's a shame that it's happened. He's kind of dripped down the league, but listen, it's up to him now to prove that he shouldn't be here and hopefully get himself a move back up to a higher league. He's certainly young enough and got enough time on his hands that nothing's too late for him, to be fair.
Yeah, so the big thing, the big kind of story that came out, I guess, in January was Rory leaving and you then getting the captaincy. We'll talk about the captaincy in a minute, but Rory leaving, was that something that came out of the blue? Did anybody expect it? Did anybody see it coming?
I think it came out of the blue for the boys, but listen, Rory was a fantastic servant to the club. I couldn't speak highly enough of him as a man and as a player. You'll know yourself, you've certainly watched him for longer than I've been his teammate and how well he done for the club. It came out of the blue, but was it something that was maybe not far around the corner? Maybe because, listen, he spoke when he went to Cove, he's got friends at Cove and stuff like that, so we'd always kind of knew that he did, like obviously Jordan and the boys that used to play at Peterhead, we knew he was kind of close with him, so it wasn't like completely out of the blue, but yeah, it was out of the blue, if that makes sense. Like, we weren't expecting it certainly to be in January, so obviously when you lose your talisman like that, it's obviously going to be difficult after he leaves, but I'm sure in the summer Jim will be looking to obviously get a new striker on board, and hopefully we can start getting back amongst the goals when the football does eventually start.
Is it more surprising how quick it came about, Scott? Because obviously it sort of broke like the Friday, Saturday that he was aware of it, and then by the Wednesday, Thursday, it was sort of deal done.
Yeah, I mean, Cove didn't waste much time, to be fair. I think, like, you know what football's like. Sometimes these things can drag out, but sometimes these things can just be as simple as the player wants to go, the club wants to sign him. So, listen, always expect the unexpected in football. He's obviously been a hero at Peterhead for 7, 8, 9 years, however long he was there, and it just shows you that things can change so quickly in football. It's just one thing that you need to be aware of.
Did it change Jim's plans in January as well, for your point of view? Where if Rory was there, then within a week he's gone, did it change his plans slightly?
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, listen, it's a question you would need to ask the manager, what would have happened if Rory had stayed, but from a player's point of view, it's obviously missing somebody like he is, a big figure kind of thing. So we did miss him, and I'm sure the fans, like, showed to the fans that we were missing him on the pitch, but it was always going to take time to adapt after.
Yeah.
Certainly he had been there for so long, and he kind of carried the can of being the main man for so long. It was always going to take time for not the other boys as such, because we all feel like we play a part in the team, but just missing that kind of goal threat as such, that raw talent and scoring goals, it's hard to replace, because you know how many clubs he was linked with throughout his career. Listen, everybody wants to have a goal scoring striker that scores 20 goals a season, and Rory's done that consistently throughout his career. That is a massive compliment to him.
Yeah.
So then the captaincy became available. Did Jim discuss it with you first, or did he offer you, or how did that come about?
He didn't discuss it with me, to be fair. He just kind of handed it to me against, I think I spoke with him on the Tuesday night, and he just said, look, I'm going to make you my captain, which I was obviously delighted with. It's a great honour for me, and it's never really something I've thought about, to be fair. I've always kind of been a kind of quieter player in the dressing room, where I kind of just keep myself to myself. I'll say stuff if something needs said, but I like to lead more by example on the pitch than be a mouth off it, if that makes sense. But obviously it's a great honour for me to take it on, and hopefully I can be the best of both worlds, if that makes sense, and be kind of the leader on the pitch that leads by example, but also can get the boys going if that's what's needed off the pitch. And it's obviously a great thing to have when I'm only 25 still, so it's quite a thing to take on at a young age, but yeah, really pleased to have it.
So what kind of captain do you think you can be in the future?
Yeah, hopefully a leader. I mean, I'm not a natural leader. I think all the boys would tell you that. But is it something I can grow into, being a natural leader? Yeah, of course. I mean, it's something that I would like to do, is become like the main man at Peterhead that would be the voice off the pitch and on the pitch. I'm more as I said, I'd like to lead more by example on the pitch as opposed to being a budgie up for the boys. But I've got a good kind of teammates around me where they'll say stuff if something needs said, like Simon, obviously Paddy Boyle, Clem, they've all been there and done it and seen a lot in the game. So it's not just a case of me taking on the captaincy and being the only voice. It's a dressing room full of people that will not be short to say something when it needs said, to be fair.
I believe it. We hear Simon quite a lot during the game. Anyway, so he does need a captain's armband to keep going.
Exactly. To be fair, he is the main voice in the dressing room, and I'm sure you watch his podcasts and stuff. He is that kind of guy that will not be shy in saying something that needs said. To be fair, and listen, some boys respond well to that, and if that's what needs said, that's what needs said.
Yeah. Does that help you as a captain, Scott Henson, beside you?
Absolutely. I mean, even now, stuff that needs done, like day to day, like during this lockdown, I'm texting Simon to ask, should I do this, should I do that, should I say this? So, yeah, it's great to have somebody who has experience to kind of obviously lean on, and he'll not be the only one I lean on from time to time, to be fair. I might need me, as I say, like Paddy, Dell, obviously. Clem, it is quite an experienced group, Conroy, that we've got, so I dare say that I will be leaning on these guys for their experience from time to time.
Another guy had left quite early on as well was David McCracken. Was he, how big a mess has he been to the guys this season?
He has been. He obviously took most of the training when he was here, and the gaff and David really kind of stood with like and on the side watching in, if that makes sense, which is what most managers seem to do nowadays. So he's been a massive loss, and I can only wish Cracks all the best, because he's obviously got himself a job that he was doing well, and I think they've been unlucky to kind of miss out on promotion. So yeah, fair play. I mean, he had a chance at Falkirk, and he was absolutely bang on to take it. I mean, nobody would decry him that he left Peterhead to go and take up the manager's job at Falkirk, because he's obviously got history there, and it's a great opportunity for him, obviously, to get him back into the Championship, hopefully.
I guess that was always in the conversation between him and Jim, that if a job like that came up, Jim wouldn't stand in his way.
I would imagine so. It kind of came out of the blue, really. I mean, I think it was only like a couple of days after Ray McKinnon had got sacked that Cracks and Lee Miller were obviously made interim managers, but I would dare say that the Gaffer and Cracks had an agreement that if something like that was to come up, that he would always be free to leave. Listen, Cracks was a great player for here, like for Peterhead, for the year that he played, and he was learning stuff as a coach, and he was a good coach as well. So, listen, all the best to him. Hopefully, he does well at Falkirk,
and we'll see him back again at Balmoura again. Hopefully, again.
Yeah, I think we'll see him back next year. So,
if the reconstruction,
certainly the way it's going.
The reconstruction gets sorted out and we're not playing a 14-14-14 or whatever's going to be happening there.
It certainly doesn't look that way, to be fair. I mean, I don't think many clubs can have a complaint, but listen, this is a one-off. This is never going to happen again in our lifetime. So, in my opinion, clubs should just bite the bullet. Probably easier said than done, but bite the bullet and just get on with the league next season. And if you deserve to be in a league, then you'll get promoted, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to get your thoughts on a couple of games that had a lot of talking points in the season. The first one was the Clyde game at home. We've obviously talked quite a bit about it, Michelle and Martin. What was your kind of thoughts on it as things kind of progressed? Because the game itself didn't seem to be a very dirty kind of game as such. It was feisty.
There wasn't a lot in the game, to be fair. There wasn't a lot in it, like, obviously, Simon got red carded. That was never a bad tackle. That was our opinion. Listen, things got a bit heated after that. Clyde obviously didn't like it, the fact that we were beating them 2-0. But it's just one of these things that happened. It was all blown out of proportion, to be fair. If you had booked both players and gave them both a yellow, nobody would have complained. But the referee, without going into too much detail, decided that obviously what Simon done was worthy of a red card, and worth something like 5 games he ended up serving a suspension for. It was a wee bit ridiculous, but for some reason we seem to have like a rivalry with Clyde. I don't know if it was because we were both going to the league last season, but there was a few bust-ups. Certainly, I think there was a game at Broadwood last season where there was a couple of red cards and stuff. It just seems to be a bit of a rivalry. Like, one of the rivals that you can't explain, like, it's not geographical, it's nothing. It's just the fact that I think we both seem to be at currently the same level, and it's all the games against Clyde seem to be important, to be fair. It's strange, but again, one that we kind of relish.
We've mentioned that a few times on the podcast.
Yeah.
It just seems to have come out it seems to be organic, the kind of no sort of rhyme and reason for it. It just seems that we kind of stand each other for whatever reason.
I know, the boys feel the same. You wouldn't believe what it's like. Honestly, it's like we look forward to these Clyde games for a wee while. It's like strange. It doesn't make sense. There's no, as I say, no rhyme or reason. Like, but to be fair, a record against Clyde, barring one game where they beat us up the road, seems to be really good, to be fair.
And that probably
does them up even more. It probably does. And it actually, looking back now, they celebrated that game like they just won the league at our place, kind of thing. So maybe it kind of all goes back to that. But again, going back to the games last season, they were all good games. Like, even the season before where we won the league, we were 3-1 up and the game finished 3-8. If the game had gone on for 10 minutes longer, I think we'd have beat 10-3. To be fair, there was bombardment to the attack. It was like, but somehow we hung on in there and obviously managed to get the result. And then start of this season, we drew with them up the road. There was another red card in that game. We beat them down the road at Broadwood. We've actually got a really good record at Broadwood for some reason. I don't think we've been beaten there in a wee while. And then obviously the game at Christmas where Simon gets sent off, but we dig out a 2-0. And our record seems to be pretty decent, to be fair. Again, one to look forward to next season. We'll probably have 4 games against them. So.
Well, we're hoping to have 4 games against
hopefully,
them.
Hopefully,
like this happening again, but I think Jim called the one down at Broadwood the best he's ever seen Peterhead play. Did you guys kind of feel that as well?
I don't know if you guys were there. Like, it's quite a distance to travel. Obviously, it was the first half we played them off the park. Like, Clyde are quite a good football team, and there's many games that we've been to Clyde and been to Broadwood, and we've been like, by the way, we've not had a lot of the ball, but we were winning, like, maybe winning 1-0 or 2-0, for talking sake. But in that game, like, we had 95% of the play, and it was crazy. We were 2-0 up, and it could have easily been 5-0 does at half-time. And obviously, the onslaught comes a wee bit in the second half, and they get a goal, and then you think, like, is this all a good work in the first half going to go down the pot? But we managed to kind of hold out, but that was probably the best I've seen Peterhead play, I would imagine, certainly since I've been here. I don't know if everything just clicked on that day. I don't know what it was, to be fair.
So was it kind of frustrating then that you didn't see more performances like that?
Very frustrating. Like, that was during the wee run that we went on where we won like three out of four games, and we were thinking, right, this is us, we're going to pick up now and hopefully shoot up the table a wee bit, and then you get a wee bit inconsistent again. And it's really frustrating because you know it's in there, but we're not producing it enough. So, it's down to us next season to produce the kind of performances more often than the kind of inconsistent performances where we sit, like, don't really play that well, and it becomes a wee bit scrappy, to be fair.
How would you sum up the season, Scott? Would frustrating be the word? Because also we beat Clyde doing it at Broadwood, and then we beat Raith Rovers at Balmoor within 7 days. We thought that might be the start of something.
Yeah, that is the kind of turning point we thought that it would be. And then frustrating is the word I would use, because we had a lot of, even during that wee run, we did then lose a couple 1-0, and we were actually playing pretty well, and was a wee bit frustrating. But listen, We talked about it earlier in the dressing room. We think that we could easily be up towards the playoffs and to be where we are in the league. Don't get me wrong, consolidating League One was the ultimate aim this season, because we've done that before. We went back down into League Two and we didn't want to waste 2 years of hard work, but we know that in the dressing room there's a lot more quality than certainly eighth in the league and scrambling about the bottom. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess frustrating is probably the best way to sum it up.
We said before, Colin and I, that it's a sort of division where anybody can beat anybody, and if you're able to put two or three wins together, it makes the table look a lot better. So although we're sitting in eighth, Kim, we weren't that far off. If you had a good run at the end of the season, you never know if it could have been.
Yeah, of course. You look at Montrose at the start of the season, they were like 10 points adrift, and then they won like 5, 6, 7 games in a row, and suddenly they were up challenging for the playoffs. I mean,
exactly, yeah.
Montrose are the perfect example for us as players, and as obviously as a club to look at, because that's the last two seasons they were looking for, obviously. They were pushing almost for the title this year. It just shows you what a good couple of games in a run can do for you.
The start that they had obviously didn't help, but because they got promoted the season before, just pipping us, getting to a playoff and then almost securing a playoff again, there's similarities there. So did you look at Montrose and think, well, yeah, we could do that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's a fair. Montrose are kind of the perfect example for us that you can obviously do well in this league. They pipped us by a point. It was nothing drastic. They didn't run away with the league and they showed that if they get the right, obviously, mix between playing well and kind of digging it out, that you can easily make the playoffs. And it's an example for us that we should hopefully be looking towards next season.
Yeah, the other game I wanted to get your thoughts on was the Forfar game in February. They got abandoned after about 30 minutes. As a player, was you happy that it started? Did you want it to be abandoned before the game?
Listen, see, playing these wins, it's not enjoyable for anyone, right? Mm-hmm. But if you start it and you play 30 minutes, and we defended 30 minutes into the Hurricane, the last thing you want is for it then to be cancelled. You're thinking, listen, we dig it out for another 10, 15 more minutes, we get to half time, and then suddenly we've got a massive advantage at our back. But it just made no sense for me, mate, to be honest, to start the game and then to call it off halfway through. The wind didn't get any worse from at half three compared to what it was at half two. So why was it fit to go ahead but not fit to carry on? It doesn't really make sense. But listen, I've seen a lot of managers say that there should be a wind gauge and stuff. The wind gauge would probably need to be higher at Peterhead because it's windy the best of times anyway. But it isn't a bad idea because fans don't want to come along and watch a game that's being dictated to where Clem's kicking the ball out and the centre-half's heading it on the edges at own 18-yard box. It's not fun for anyone. It's certainly not fun to play in, and I can imagine it's even worse to watch, to be fair. It kind of spoils the game. But we would probably end up with 18 games at home cancelled because of the wind, and we'd need to be playing every Tuesday night, to be fair. So it's kind of getting that fine balance between getting as many games on as possible and for them still to be entertaining.
Do you think a more experienced referee or a referee who is experienced Bob Moore more would have known that the wind probably would have died down later on in the game?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's hard for the refs because obviously they're travelling a distance, and I don't know what gets taken into account, to be fair. I don't know if they look at the forecast and they see what it's like. I'm not really too sure, because these guys are travelling, they're giving up their Saturday, don't get me wrong, they're getting paid for it and stuff, but they are giving up their time to obviously try and get the game on. But it's frustrating when you get there and the wind's terrible and it's destroying the game, and it's equally frustrating when the ref says we'll play it and we'll cancel it here as well. Sticking with one or the other, don't kind of go half and half.
So the big story then, obviously the season ended quite early on. All the matches were abandoned beginning of March. Yeah. What kind of conversations did you guys have before the season was actually officially ended? Do you think it could have been finished?
The only conversation we really had was with the PFA is would we be prepared to kind of play through this? And I think the unanimous answer from all the players in Scotland would be no, because this is a lot bigger time than football. It's nice to see that football's starting to come out the other side, and we will eventually get back to normality, slowly but surely. But listen, we're no different to Joe Public. We are just normal human beings. We don't want to go out there and put ourselves at risk when it's against kind of government advice to be at to be outside just now, apart from exercise, and it's that close spread. I think that Fraser Lister, the head of the PFA, he was talking about the Juventus player that was sat on the bench in the early days in Italy in a closed-door game, and he had it. He could have been passing it on to anyone, for all we know, when if he had made it onto the pitch. So, listen, this is literally there's life and death just now, and it's frustrating that there's no football, but hopefully come August, September, I dare say it's not going to be back to normal, but hopefully we can get football back on the pitch and get fans back engaging with the game, because as a fan myself of football, and it's a frustrating time, and there's kind of nothing worse than sitting about all day bored, but eventually we will get through this one way or another, and as I say, hopefully as many clubs can pull through this as possible. I don't want to curse Peterhead, but fingers crossed, from talking to people like Martin, we should hopefully be okay, but as long as there is a club after this is kind of the main thing.
Yeah, and I guess you're of the opinion that if we do get back to playing again, it should be with the fans and it shouldn't be behind closed doors.
Yeah, of course. Listen, if there's a way that we're allowed to play but there's not allowed to be fans in, how clubs are going to have to find a way to survive, it's obviously going to be, whether it be televised or something. I wouldn't have a problem as a player playing behind closed doors. Listen, fans, we know fans make the game, it's what football's all about, but I wouldn't have an issue playing behind closed doors if fans were able to somehow watch on the TV or something, and it's bringing joy back to... Listen, it's not very joyous watching us every Saturday, you'll probably be the first to tell us that, but it's bringing normality back into people's life. If that was the case, I'd more than happy, not that we're really putting ourselves at risk anymore, because the risk is slowly but surely getting less, but if it was a case of playing behind closed doors for the first couple of months, I would certainly be up for doing that, and listen, getting on as much as possible, whether the clubs share the same opinion as the players, I'm not sure. We just want to get back on the pitch, and obviously doing what we do best, but listen, it'll come, whether it comes with fans or whether it comes without fans at first, it will be, only time will tell, but as long as the clubs are able to survive without fans coming into the ground, whether it be, as I say, watching it on the telly or something like that, then that might be a way forward. I'm not really too sure, to be honest.
What's your opinion on this kind of hub idea that's been bandied about at the minute?
I've seen that mentioned this morning by the Gaffer, to be fair. I'm not entirely sure about the details. Is that the one where they're going to have Glasgow games, Edinburgh games and Aberdeenshire games or something, is it?
So basically, the sort of teams from the north, i.e. Peterhead, Inverness, Ross County, Elgin and Peterhead will play all their home games up Tawdry.
But right.
It'll be a case of you're playing four or five games in one day, all at the same time. So,
right.
Obviously, the only two teams that aren't going to be playing in this hub is Celtic and Rangers. They're getting to play at their own home grounds. Jim's opinion was that the pitches might be an issue if you're playing so many games.
Pathology would be an issue, I know that for a fact. I've played there in the middle of bloody January and it's like a fog, but I dare say that the pitches are getting looked after just now, so they might be ready for it. But it's not, again, listen, the players are open to anything. As long as we've got the assurances that whether it be through tests or whether it be through temperature checks, I'm not sure whether it just to make sure that nobody's carrying the virus and it's going to be spread. But players are frustrated. We've got to get back out on the pitch as much as fans want to play football, whether that be, as I say, through closed doors or the hub idea. We're kind of open to anything. We're not worried really anything out, to be fair. We wouldn't get in the way of football starting again, that's for sure.
Is it more frustrating, Scott, that you didn't have a date of when you go back? Normally, when the season ends, you've got a date to work to, in like July with the Cup and the league in the August. Is that more frustrating than anything just now?
Yes. And, you know, I've been thinking this in day-to-day life. I play golf quite a lot, and Sturgeon's coming out every day and saying it'll be this week. We've got nothing to work towards yet. And I'm not criticising. This is not turning into a political show today. I'm not going to do that. But we need something to work towards. It's starting to become frustrating mentally that we're just going day by day. We've kind of got nothing to look forward to as such. We've got nothing to really work towards. If there was a date to work towards in day-to-day life and football, again, it would be easier. You've got something to look forward to and something to count down to. Just now, we're kind of in open water. We're not really... We're trying to keep ourselves fit, the players, but we don't know eventually when we will be back, and it is frustrating, but...
Is that hard trying to keep yourself fit just now as well? Okay, and obviously we're getting exercise a lot more than we were a couple of weeks ago, but is that hard for you guys trying to keep fit and you've no idea when you're back to training or back to playing football?
It is, because Hoggy's obviously given us stuff to do, which is fair enough, and now during this time, sorry, my girlfriend's just leaving the house. Now during this time, we would normally be off, and it's different because we've had 8 weeks off. So should we be? It's hard because you don't know whether how hard to be training and how hard to be pushing yourself, because obviously it's going to be a long season when we eventually get back into it. The last thing you want to do is push yourself too hard over the summer and then you go back fatigued. But at the same time, you don't want to go back and you're miles off it, if that makes sense.
And ordinarily, this time of the year, I guess contract talks would be in place. You know where you might be playing for next season. Is all that taking a side issue at the minute?
Yeah, that's all a side issue. And I'm sure the players can. We're obviously still on furlough, so I'm sure the players can understand that. Listen, the clubs are going to sort themselves out eventually. We understand that if the season's not going to start till September or something, then it's a wee bit early to be talking about what's going to happen when we get there, because the last thing we really want is, or the last thing the clubs need, is to be paying 6 months' worth of wages with no income coming in, because if clubs are doing that, then clubs will go to the wall. But thankfully, I think most clubs have been helped out by the furlough scheme, which has been a massive relief, I think, for most people. But It's hard because, going back to the training thing, we're usually training in amongst a group of boys, and going out obviously doing it yourself every day can be a bit mind-numbing at times. But listen, that's what it is. As I say, we'll get through this. This is a one-off in our life, and we'll get through this and hopefully get back on the pitch soon.
Yeah. So you think September, October, maybe August, you're hoping?
Again, it's hard to predict. I mean, it could be as early as August. I mean, I think I read somewhere the SPFL are still trying to work towards August, but I'm not entirely sure how physically possible that's going to be, because, I mean, we're in May just now and nothing really seems to be getting any easier as such. But, listen, I think there's groups working behind the scenes, obviously, with physios and doctors and stuff like that. They'll be making sure that it's safe for the players to return when it is obviously safe to do so. So they just need to leave it just now with the experts.
You think there might be a scenario where it might not necessarily be up Peterhead, but it might be at other clubs up and down the country, that a player or players will say, you know, I don't want to play, even though they've been told that it's free to play, that they're clear to play, but they're just saying, no, it's too much of a risk?
Yeah, I can see that happening. I'm not gonna lie. People are sometimes more prepared, not more prepared as such, but people have different scenarios in their life. Like, some people might have a newborn kid or elderly relatives that live with them. It might be difficult for these people to justify going back to play and maybe catching the virus. I'm quite in a fortunate position. It's just me and my girlfriend in the house, so really we're still young and hopefully quite fit enough to be able to fight it off if it was to come to that. So I wouldn't see, if the medical experts obviously say it's pretty safe to do so, then I wouldn't have a problem with being back at football. But yeah, I can see a scenario where some people say they don't feel safe on the pitch. But until, look at German football, they're testing hundreds and thousands of tests a week to make sure that this isn't spreading between the players. I dare say that won't be financially feasible in Scotland, but we need to rely on the kind of experts to come up with the most suitable solution and kind of go with it. But it's a scary time. I wouldn't blame anyone that says, listen, I don't really feel ready to put myself at risk yet, but it's just whether obviously we can find a way around that or not.
You mentioned Stuart Hogg's giving you plenty of stuff to do. Is Jim in regular contact with you? Is he in contact with the rest of the boys as well?
Yeah, he's just kind of said that if we need him, kind of contact him. I don't think he's kind of wanting to hassle us too much with football and stuff just now. He's just kind of leaving it as a side issue, and as I say, like, we've got bigger things to worry about just now, and we're on here talking about football. It's nice to actually come away from the day-to-day stuff about worrying about coronavirus and just get back to talking about football. It's nice. So, but yeah, as deep down, as a side issue, whether we like it or not just now. So, yeah, he's there in the background if we need him, but I dare say not many boys have needed to go to him yet.
And it's good to know that you've got somebody like that you can just pick up the phone for as well and just have a chat.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's a great club to be around. It's kind of a family club where all the boys, you feel like you could speak to any of the boys if you wanted to pick up the phone and have a chat with them. And have you ever had any issues? And listen, I'd like to think as a captain, any of the lads that had any problems could give me a phone as well as a gaffer if they didn't want to kind of share it with him. But yeah, it's nice. Obviously, people like Martin and obviously the chairman and stuff have always been in contact with me, but just try to get it into the boys that they're there if they kind of need them.
You've just finished your fourth season, I think it is, with Peterhead.
Yeah.
It's been your, obviously, the league title last season, but any other highlights in that time?
Yeah, the league title last season was great, obviously. The full of last season was really enjoyable. It wasn't straightforward. It was a bit of a topsy-turvy ride. At no point until about April time could you say that we were really the favourites to win it. Obviously, Edinburgh were out in front for a good while, and obviously then Clyde decided to push us. It was never really that easy, but apart from the day at hand and the whole season in general, we've obviously beat Hearts in the Betfred Cup when I've been here, and yeah, the Betfred Cup this year was actually quite enjoyable. We obviously done quite well against Inverness, went to Dundee and done really well, but we got beaten penalties. We beat Cove, and then obviously had a chance to go through and went to Raith and turned up and got beat 3-1, so we did let ourselves down that night a wee bit, but obviously the league title's the standout memory, but everything else has been really enjoyable. Obviously the season we got relegated was one to forget.
And what was Jim's, how did he convince you to come to Peterhead then?
After I got released by St Johnstone, I kind of held off looking for a full-time club, but it never really came about. And then Peterhead says, listen, we'll take you in, do some training. I played one game up at Lossiemouth, I think. And the gaffer really got on the gaffer the second that I'd met him. And I didn't know the gaffer before that, and really got on with him, and he just kind of said that as long as I was here, he would enjoy working with me and stuff. And as soon as I heard stuff like that, I was more than happy to come. It's really the first time in my career that I'd played week in, week out. Obviously, I've been at Bradford and St Johnstone, Dumbarton on loan. It was kind of stop, start, really. And nobody wants to get to a Saturday and not be playing. It's not as enjoyable as you would think it would be. So, yeah, I've loved my time here. The gaffer's always been brilliant with me. Like, I've had a couple of offers to go back full-time, and we've spoke it through, and he's always said he would never really stand in my way, and I'm thankful for that, because I know where I stand. If it ever was to come back up, then I would be able to go and speak to him about it.
And you mentioned your time at St Johnstone. You got a goal against Celtic as well, didn't you?
Yeah, don't like talking about that one, though. I'll get ripped for it, because I took a few deflections, and all my mates always say, oh, I deflected then and such, but it still counts, I suppose. Like, my one goal in the SPL has been against Celtic, so I can't complain, really.
No.
A name like Scott Brown as well, it was probably written to be. I know, it was probably destined to. I was trying to get his shot after the game and stuff, and he was giving it to a physio or something. It was a bit unfortunate, otherwise I would have a nice few one for the collection, but don't worry.
You played in the Europa League as well for St Johnstone.
Yeah, I mean, that was probably one of the highlights of my career so far, to be fair. Like, we played over in Switzerland against Luzern, and played the second leg back here as well, which we went through in penalties. So that was a good couple of nights, to be fair. Really enjoyed that, and unfortunately, we kind of went to the next round against Trnava and Slovakia, and kind of thought it was going to be a wee bit easier than what it was against Luzern, and not took our foot off the gas as such. Maybe we were a wee bit complacent and obviously got put out, which was a shame. But yeah, to play, not many people can say they played in the Europa League. It was a pretty special experience, to be fair.
And I think you were still relatively young at the time, 18, 19?
Yeah, 18, I was 18, 19, I think, when we were playing in Europe. So that would have been 6 years ago, you're 19. So obviously to get an experience like that when I was so young was really good. I mean, I remember Switzerland being like 35 degrees and it was a bit of a joke, to be fair. It was not good for my pale, kind of pale skin. And the next year we played in Armenia, which was a bit of an eye-opener as well. Again, first round, it was like almost the week after the Scottish Cup final that it felt like we were back in training, and we lost 1-0 to Alaska over there. And I swear it was like 40 degrees. It was the first ever game that had like water breaks and stuff that I've been involved in, because it was that hot and we struggled, man. It was so warm, like couldn't get going at all, and they beat us 1-0 and then came back here and drew one each. But
I don't think I've seen a water break in Baltimore before.
No, never. I wouldn't imagine so, to be fair.
It doesn't get that hot.
I think the rules has to be it's like 35 degrees before it gets for an actual official water break. So what happens, the ref blows the whistle at 30 minutes and you'll go over the side and like 5 minutes worth of water, so it's like a half time before half time, and then it happens in the second half as well. But we just conceded the goal in the second half, so nobody was kind of wanting to walk over the side. Like, we're all kind of just standing in the middle of the pitch trying to hide away for like the ball and what we're going to get. But it was, yeah, good memories, to be fair. Really good memories. Wouldn't change it.
Excellent. Like, we're going to end with some sort of quick fire questions about your teammates.
Yeah.
You know, honest you can be.
Right, okay.
So, start off then, who's the hardest man in the team?
Dell. For the obvious reasons. Like, great guy. He honestly, he's one of the best guys I've ever met in my life. You wouldn't think, like, you think of this hard man that's got scars everywhere. He's like, honestly, so down to earth. He's a really great guy.
Who's the best and worst at training?
Jack's a joke at training, man. Like, some of the stuff he does at training is ridiculous. Who's the worst? Probably me. I'm not a great, like, I've seen an article that Simon says I'm pretty good in training, but some nights, Paddy's on me all the time, you know that, for training. He says I'm shocking in training, so. Hoggy as well. Hoggy's always saying, oh, just as well you're not bad on a Saturday because you're shocking during the week. But I actually don't think I'm that bad a trainer, to be honest. But you and the boys seem to be on me for some reason.
Just the encouragement you're needing, isn't it?
Just the encouragement I'm needing, I'm sure. Like, I think when the game opens up in the 11v11, there's a wee bit more space. I kind of get away with a wee bit more.
You must have been doing something like if you got the captaincy then.
I know. Well, hopefully on the pitch rather than in training.
Oh, it's not a award for your training.
I know.
Who's the nutmeg king?
Oh, Jack again. Honestly, seeing training, he's so hard to get the ball off. Andy McCarthy's came in, and he's a wee bit the same. The two of them are training, are so hard to get the ball off, and obviously, we boyd these come in as well. A few skillful players in the team now, so hopefully we can kind of see a wee bit more for him next season.
Who's the worst dressed player from the turn up to training?
You've seen Simon's gear on the interview. Simon wears some crazy gear, man. Like, I'm sure it's stylish. Like, it's just not my thing. But as I say, people idolise Simon. I know that for a fact. All over Twitter, like people say, but he does get a few ribbons for his gear. With it,
I might know the answer to this one. But who's the biggest diva?
Who would you say?
I thought he was going to go with Simon again.
Could go with Simon, could go with Jack. Probably one of the two.
The most intelligent player on the team?
Apart from me, I'd probably say definitely not Gaz. Gaz has come out with a few special quotes. Who's the most intelligent? You know, I think somebody like Paddy Paddy's quite intelligent. I think, like, he doesn't come across as the most intelligent, but he's doing, like, a PE degree. Not that, like, other boys aren't clever, but I think Paddy's probably...
Who's always on their phone?
Dell. Somebody said they shared their room with Dell and his phone was going off during the night. That's good enough for me.
Practical Joker. Who's the one that's most likely to crack the jokes in training?
Simon. As you can I'm sure you can imagine what Simon's like. He's lively, isn't he?
Does Simon actually do any training, or is he just pranking about most of the time?
He sounds like he's... I've painted a terrible picture of Simon. It sounds like he's just having a massive laugh all the time. Simon's a great... Listen, Simon's got the potential to be a top manager one day. See some of his coaching and stuff. It's really good and, like, stepped beyond what you would expect from a player just coming out of the game. I couldn't pay tribute to him highly enough about how good his coaching is and stuff.
Who picks the music before the games?
Normally Jason or Dell. Jason's a wee bit toned down, but Dell's going to be a wee bit like a rave in his pub, I could imagine. But it's normally one of the two.
And does anybody do any impressions? Are they good impressions or bad impressions?
I couldn't tell you that. I couldn't actually. I don't really know if any of the boys are good at any of that.
No.
Never got to see if any of them are good at it when we get back at it.
That'd be a question when you get back. And who takes the most selfies?
Simon. He's all over, like, obviously with what he does, he's all over the internet, isn't he? So, plus he's good looking. Why would he not take one of his selfies and go for that? Nah, I'm only kidding, he's going to rub me for that as well.
Does he tell you that he's good looking as well?
Oh, he tells all the boys.
Excellent stuff. Thanks very much, Scott, for coming on.
No worries, mate, no worries.
Yeah, appreciate it, Scott. Thank you very much.
No worries, I enjoyed that. Cheers.
Thank you.
That was Scott Brown there, who joined us earlier on in the week. Our big thanks goes to him for taking the time out to join us. Our thanks also go to our sponsor, Marcos Chipper, and our thanks go to you guys as well for listening. Hope you're all still keeping safe and keeping well, and we'll see you all again soon. Cheers.